This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live on the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt and Patrick here today. Patrick, I got always nice. I did get my fantasy football team drafted finally. We're not a sports station. We do talk politics all the time, but we're just like everyone else. I do a fantasy football league. I've won the league. I've completely finished last in the league. That was last year. Thanks, first week of three major injuries. Do you do fantasy football?
I have not done it in a few years. Okay. I don't even really miss it that much.
All right. I'm almost there. When I look up and see George Kittle, my tight end, is questionable for the weekend. What? I guess I got to play. Who's my backup tight end? Oh, I got Goddard for Detroit. Philadelphia, he plays at Detroit. That's not a bad pick. So I did the homer thing, man. I picked third in the draft. I was supposed to pick first, and I was informed at the last second I picked third. So, of course, the stud running guy from Indianapolis is gone. The guy from Carolina is gone. So then it was all to wide receivers. So guess who I took?
Justin Jefferson.
I did. Justin Jefferson. I drafted him. Fournette, Mixon. Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson is great if he's healthy. That guy puts up tons of fantasy points if he's healthy. Moore. Renfro, Kittle, the 49ers defense, Tampa Bay's kicker, suck up. My backup quarterback is Trey Lance. That's not a bad backup.
No. And for those of you who might be like, suck up, that's a name that he wasn't making a comment about sucking up in any way.
Well, it is
that's
Tom Brady's name. Team. So. Connor, Elder, Kirk, I have no idea who the rest of these guys are. I just basically at that point, it's like, who's the best guy left on the board? Need player. So we'll see how this goes. I'm turning my attention to this because, and I'll just say this once again, quick sports thing, I'm going to be done talking sports. I am up here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. The Twins are basically, hey, they're playing the Yankees, and guess what? Once again, we're getting our cabooses handed to us. It's over. The Twins aren't going to the playoffs this year. They're just not. So I'm hoping the Brewers do well because Boston, my three teams are Boston, Milwaukee, and Minnesota. Those are my three favorite teams.
Milwaukee's not doing any better, unfortunately.
It's better than Boston. I think of all the three teams, I think the best chance is Milwaukee to get in there. But it's another painful baseball season here in the upper Midwest. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick, had you ever gone to London? Did you ever get over there?
I have not, no.
I went over when I was in the military. I did a trip over just to, you know, kind of see the sights. And went past Buckingham Palace. And, you know, it's interesting for us. I mean, we weaned ourselves off the Queen a long time ago, actually the King. King George back then, we said enough's enough. We don't really want this. And so, but the fact that they still have them there are a few monarchies left out there that seem to have some level of power. I always kind of got the impression just because when I walked past her place and saw how much, you know, she's got. And then, of course, all the different castles, you know, she actually, the Queen of England owned a house of her on Cedar Lake for many years that I think in 2015 finally sold to someone. Racket's got that story. But yeah, she used to own property here. She owns property all around the globe. I mean, they've got so much wealth. It probably is comparable to the Vatican as amount of money they've got. I mean, they got that kind of obscene amount of cash. And so I don't know if they've really got power or, you know, political power, or they just got the power, the family's got the power to, you know, kind of scare people just because they've got so much wealth. But I always saw a last bastion of an old style of Earth, and that is, you know, this wealthy upper class that's born into prestige and stuff like this, ruling over people who, as they're born, will never do more than just work in fields for the rest of their lives. I mean, the reason why there was such an appeal by the Europeans and other countries to other continents to come to the United States was this concept of land. And once again, we can definitely talk about how it was taken from the Native Americans. For these people, they had been born into a system in the 1800s where for the last 600 years, their family had been basically, you know, controlled serfs, workers for the duke or the count or whoever was in charge of the land, never having any money for themselves, always basically having to work for someone else from the day they were born. And all of a sudden they could just jump on a boat and come over here and have their own land. It seems the queen and the monarchy just is a flashback to a time when, frankly, I think the world was more broken. And it was definitely more selfish. Although I think we're starting to give it a pound-for-pound rush nowadays. Doesn't mean I didn't think Queen Elizabeth was somewhat nice. I mean, it's hard to gauge from the outside perspective. On one side, she definitely seemed like, you know, she seemed to run her family and her household like a freaking Game of Thrones episode. I mean, she really... The pomp and circumstance, that was stuff that she was really, really intent on. At the same time, you know, whenever she did a public appearance, she seemed just like a very pleasant elderly lady. And, you know, so, I mean, I don't know if, I mean, it's, and for a lot of people in England, I mean, I think that that's what it was. It was kind of the unofficial grandmother they had or great aunt they had, just that lovely institution that had been there, and she'd been around for a long time. As a matter of fact, it's interesting. I just watched the movie The King's Speech, a very good film that deals with her dad and how he came to the throne and his speech issues, which he worked on with a therapist who helped him get through being able to speak to the public during World War II. And such. And but the fact that, you know, her, you know, when she was born, the idea of her actually ascending the throne was nowhere on the horizon. And yet, you know, just a few years later, there she was. Queen Elizabeth II, the world's longest serving monarch, whose broadly popular 7-decade reign survived tectonic shifts in Britain's post-imperial society and weathered successive challenges posed by the romantic choices, missteps, and interactions of her descendants, has passed away today at Balmoral Castle in Scotland, her summer retreat. She was 96. Good run. That's a good run. The royal family announced her death online, saying she had died peacefully. The announcement did not specify her cause. I kind of got the impression from the news flashes that were coming through this morning that I'm wondering if she passed away in her sleep. I really do. I kind of do wonder about that under that guise being that it did seem to me that... would they announce she passed away in her sleep? No, and they wanted to get family there, kind of get everything I's dotted, T's crossed, and then moved on. So I'm wondering if that's what exactly happened. She died peacefully, and God bless her. The announcement did not, specify her cause. The death elevated her eldest son, Charles, to the monarchy as King Charles III. In a statement, he said, "The death of my beloved mother, Her Majesty the Queen, is a moment of the greatest sadness for me and all members of my family. We mourn profoundly the passing of a cherished sovereign and a much-loved mother. I know her loss will be deeply felt throughout the country, the realms, and the Commonwealth, and by countless people around the world." Earlier Thursday, Buckingham Palace said that the Queen had been placed under medical supervision and that her doctors were concerned about her health. She had remained at Balmoral for much of the summer. On Wednesday evening, she abruptly canceled a virtual meeting with members of her Privy Council after her doctors advised her to rest. Privy Council? Oh, England. On Tuesday, she met with the incoming Conservative Prime Minister, Liz Truss, the 15th Prime Minister the Queen has dealt with during her reign, though in doing so, because of infirmity, she broke with longstanding tradition by receiving her at Balmoral rather than at Buckingham Palace. Elizabeth's long years as sovereign were a time of enormous upheaval in which she sought to protect and project and protect the royal family as a rare bastion of prominence in the world of shifting values. At her coronation on June 2nd, 1953, a year after she ascended to the throne, she surveyed a realm emerging from an empire of such geographic reach that it had sun never set on it. But in the new century, as she navigated in her advancing years with increasing frailty, the frontiers had shrunk back, that Britain prepared to leave the European Union in 2020. A clamor for independence in Scotland was rekindled, potentially threatening to narrow her horizons even further. That's kind of as much as she can say, you know, she had a successful reign. The reality is, and I don't necessarily think this is the monarchy of England. I think this is the government of England, that their empire territorial, you know, machinations came to an end. And, you know, basically the people said, get out. You remember what happened in the U.S. back in 1776? Go, bye, let the door hit your butt on the way out. And that's kind of what happened. And you know, quite literally, there's a decent chance, considering how bad the economy is in England right now, and it is bad. The British pound is at the lowest point it's been since in the early 80s now. It's really bad. There's a decent chance Scotland will leave the British Isles and head out on its own. And yet that's going to be part of the legacy as well. The inability of the monarchy to just sit back and watch as their once great empire crumbles. So, and yeah, Charles III, really good. I'll tell you what, more on this when we do come back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Broadcasting live on locally grown radio, WFHR, 1320 AM, 97.5 FM in Wisconsin Rapids, Stevens Point, WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw in Waukesha, Milwaukee, Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, 98.9 FM, 1230 AM in Wausau, Devil Radio, 92.7 FM, Madison, and WTTN, 1580 AM in Columbus, and on the flagship, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota and Minneapolis, St. Paul, it is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. 952-946-6205. More here on the passing of Queen Elizabeth. Goodbye! She seems like... I mean, my gosh, I mean, that. How about that as a comic bit? Everyone from the kids in the hall to Jon Stewart, hello! she definitely left her, you know, what's interesting, and let me read this next paragraph for you, because I think this is kind of an interesting element of this reign. Her coronation was the first royal event of its kind to be broadcast almost in full on television, but it was a token of the changes and global fascination that accompanied her time as queen that her reign became the subject of a Hollywood movie and a blockbuster series on Netflix, while her family's travails often offered grist to the heated mill of the social media. It's interesting because it's almost like I've talked to people before about, you know, celebrity and, you know, be careful what you ask for, because I've seen what happens, not necessarily myself. Sweet Jesus, no. But I have seen people who have wanted celebrity, popularity, the camera on them at all times. And then when it does happen, that's a grind. And there are people like Tom Hanks who, my God, everywhere the guy goes, there's cameras in his face. And he seems to weather it pretty well. Brad Pitt seems to do the same thing. But the reality is that's because those guys have figured out that their lives are over. And that's the problem, is that people want celebrity. People want the attention, but they want it on their terms, and that's not how it works. That, and when it comes to celebrity as we have it here in the United States, you know, the idea that, well, I'm just still going to be able to go down to my favorite restaurant and get my burger. No, that's not how it works. I'm not going to be able to. You're not going to be able to. You're going to have to go get someone to go pick it up and bring it to your house. That's the best you can do. Or you're going to have to coordinate to where you enter in the back door and seat in their private VIP room in the back, because if you go out and through the main room, you get mobbed. That's what celebrity is. And it's in it. I find it somewhat interesting that the people that kept looking and saying, look at me, look at me, look at me, all of a sudden seem to have a disdain for the media that they clearly welcome into their life. I mean, for God's sakes, the entire concept of a castle is this glowing beacon of masonry on the horizon to look down upon the working class. For goodness sakes. I mean, that's the concept. Go over to St. Paul here, where up on the big hill by the cathedral, all the big wealthy people built their houses so the Gilded Age could have the, oh, look at the peasants down below. I mean, that's the concept. You just didn't anticipate that the attention that you were beckoning would become so relentless. And on one side of it, too, you want to welcome people in because look at our jewels, look what we have, isn't this great? But on the other side, you don't want to acknowledge the fact that once you welcome them in, you can't control them. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you can sit there and argue about, oh, well, I wish that they wouldn't cover this. I wish they wouldn't, the media are jackals, all these things. And don't get me wrong, I'm not, especially entertainment media, I'm not denying that. The tabloid media in Britain, my God, they're brutal. But you welcome them in because you wanted the attention. And now that they're giving it to you, you want them to do it in a certain way. And that's just, yeah, I think that's kind of, if anything, kind of epitomizes the reign of the monarchy. It's the look at us, look at us. Why are you looking at us? Stop looking at the guy, my brother, who basically is creepy, Prince Andrew, creepy. Ugh. Yeah, and. You it's like how many of the princesses and duchesses and whatever the hell they're called, how many of them will go on out there and like, oh, it's gonna be, let's go look like we're like Instagram family, we're going out there partying, woo, partying, and then all of a sudden it shows them drunk the next day. It's like, how dare you look at me drunk? You welcomed them in. Just as telling as the Chronicles of a Rule, Britain's unquestioning deference to the crown has been supplanted by a gamut of emotions ranging from loyal to often affectionate tolerance to unbridled on hostility. The monarchy was forced more than ever to justify its existence in the face of often skeptical public attention and scrutiny. Elizabeth, though, remained determined, committed to the hallmark aloofness, formality and pageantry by which the monarchy has long sought to preserve the mystique underpinned its existence and survival. Her courtly and reserved manner changed little. And it did. Like I said, she ran that house, you know, like it's Game of Thrones. And she is the really the last of the monarchs that goes back to the time where, hello, we're the white people. Well, I got to be careful how I say this, because the reality is, you know, the United States of America is an unfortunate monument to white people coming in and controlling minorities. But when you look at her, she is of that actual reigning class. Is there anyone? I don't think there's anyone else that, you know, her dad was in charge of an empire. She was in charge of an empire for many years before it peeled off. There's going to be a lot on this. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of the pomp and circumstance of the funeral and the coronation of Charles III, who, by the way, I got to imagine is already over there screaming, how can we make this happen as fast as possible? And yeah, that would be my guess is, you know, because that's kind of Charles. I've kind of gotten that impression on King Charles III, not Prince Charles anymore, King Charles III. And by the way, you should read the other Charles's. Kind of a hoot. Anyway, but No, I mean, there's going to be a lot focused on here, but I think that if we can focus on anything, maybe what we should really do is that, you know, these things are quaint. And sure, they have dungeons and castles and moats. They've got drawbridges and, you know, and a history which is colorful and terrifying at the same time. But maybe what we should look at this is that as this is Charles takes over, maybe it's time for us to start really kind of coming to grips with, is this really what we want? Is this really, you know, and this is England. You are entitled to your own thing. But as far as we go, I almost kind of wonder if it's time for us to just kind of, we need to come to grips with the fact that we fought against this sort of thing, the monarchy. We didn't want a person controlling us. And maybe it's time for us to look at this new age and say, it's time for equality for all. And my God, if we could only achieve that, that would be fantastic. We'll take a break. Come on in. Coming back, some other topics when we return. It's the Matt McNeil Show. The Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 952-946-6205. Someone calling in saying, hey, show some respect. Wait a second here. I'm not saying I'm happy she's dead. She lived to 96. It's a good run. It's a good run. You know, I did quite say that, you know, her public persona was very pleasant, and I can see why a lot of people in England considered her like a great aunt or a grandmother or something like that. She seemed very pleasant whenever she talked. But I also, she's a world leader, regardless of what manifestation that power still takes. And, you know, looking at a legacy when you were there for 70 years, and once again, she was there. She took the throne just years after India left the British Empire. And as other parts of the empire peeled off as well. And so to look at her reign and look at how it changed over the years, that's not being disrespectful. That's the thing there. And if you're upset because I said about the media and how the, you know, for goodness sakes, it's like I said, I mean, the war they had with the tabloids in England is a well-documented one. And, you know, but at the same time, the entire concept of monarchies is look at me, look at me, look at me. It just is the world got to a point, you know, when she took the throne, it was the first time the monarchy, the ascension was broadcast. And here we are today with, you know, the internet, billions of TV channels, everyone's got a TikTok video. The celebrity and video intrusion becomes a much bigger thing. And, you know, it's a very different world. Comparatively, I would much rather have Queen Elizabeth II still in power as opposed to King Charles III. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a little concerned about him. But that being said, I think that it's no disrespect. I'm not in any way happy or glad she's gone. It just is. It definitely is the end of, you can say this when any monarchy in England or any other place in the world passes away. It's an end of an era. But her era, since it was 70 freaking years, is so far substantial. And the changes that have happened during her reign, how can you not talk about that? And as the New York Times story I just read dictated, They basically, this was a time when she basically kind of still maintained that monarchy and that presence throughout the entire time. That's not me. That's observation. If you take that as being disrespectful, I'm not trying to be, but this is not as if it's Phil from the hardware store just passing away. It's Queen Elizabeth II after 70 years on the throne. And what does the monarchy even mean today? I think that's a fair question to ask. It's not meaning I'm happy she's gone. I'm not a British citizen, so the monarchy, I don't own any loyalty to the monarchy. But at the same time, it is, looking at her legacy is a fair, it's a fair deal. 952-946-6205. The, speaking of which, if I can talk about legacy, there is, on a completely different level. A new mentality that's rising within the Republican ranks. And it boils down to something I have said for years, is that Democrats, you need to make sure you present yourself as strident, as straightforward, with an agenda, with compassion. You need to be proud Democrats. You need to show leadership, because in a vacuum, when there is no leadership, belligerence looks like leadership. And the problem the Democrats have, and this is one of the things I love about Joe Biden right now, Joe Biden is lashing back and saying, no, I'm very proud of being a Democrat. And while you have some Democrats who are like, don't associate me with my party, vote me. You know, there are people still like that. The reality is 30 years of Democrats not being proud Democrats has led us to the point where a belligerent blowhard like Trump can basically become the president of the United States, because belligerence looks like integrity, looks like leadership in a vacuum. You give people a reason to vote for you. You don't just say, well, you see how crazy they are on the other side. That means you got to vote for me, right? No, that doesn't. You got to give them a reason to vote for it. And this new mentality is based kind of, I mean, we can see where this train has been going. We saw this in the last election. There is not a substantial amount, but there are definitively a lot of people who just do not believe that they lost. They just... It's against their entire... It can't have happened, because they convinced themselves 1,000% of the population loved Trump. So that if he didn't win overwhelmingly, then clearly there are signs of fraud. There's something that can go on. He must have won. We have... What county was it? Was it Crow Wing County out in western Minnesota, where Trump won by 30 or something like that? And these people still think that he should have won by more. And you're like, wow, you really are looking through a filter which is broken at that point, because you just don't see it. But this is what they want. It's belligerence beyond belligerence. It's Sarah Palin just flabbergasted that, you know, half the people that voted for the other Republican didn't vote for her. And sitting there because she was waiting for her ascension to that throne of that representative seat out there in Alaska. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's belligerence for belligerence sake. And when you are thinking of belligerence for belligerence sake, no one in American politics sizes that up more than Ron DeSantis, the likely presidential candidate for the Republican Party in 2024. A story in Florida deserves a lot more attention than it's getting. This is from the Huffington Post. It's about Ron DeSantis, the state's Republican governor, and the arrest of 20 Floridians. The crime they stand accused of committing is a form of election fraud, specifically voting even though past criminal convictions made them ineligible. DeSantis, at a news conference in August, touting the arrest as the first big score for an election integrity task force he created to great fanfare. Today's actions send a clear signal to those who are thinking about ballot harvesting or fraudulent voting. If you commit an election crime, you'll be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. The arrest, the statements, and the sentiments behind them are not especially surprising, given that DeSantis has always presented himself as a tough law and order governor, and they are likely to endear him as conservatives who think America is awash with voter fraud, usually committed for the sake of helping Democrats and usually involving voters of minority groups. Sure enough, most of the 20 arrested Floridians are black, according to media accounts. But the rationale for the arrest hasn't held up well to scrutiny. Over the past few weeks, several local and national publications have pieced together the stories of what many of these Floridians actually did and why. It looks less and like episodes of nefarious election tampering and more like instances of honest confusion about what a new voter law says. But it's the kind of situation that might prompt some introspection and maybe even an apology from some elected officials. But DeSantis isn't even acknowledging the arrest might have been a mistake, let alone suggested that any of these Floridians deserve an apology, which perhaps says a lot about his style of leadership as well as many of the conservatives who cheer it on. Now, if you haven't read this story, what it sounds like is many of these people had asked, can I vote? And they were told yes. So they went and voted. And the people that gave them the go-ahead to vote did not understand that the way the law was written, they weren't entitled to it. And so even though these people did the right thing and checked before they voted if they could vote and were told by officials, yes, you can vote, DeSantis is locking them up because he wants to look like he's tough on crime. I bring this up because we've got a real big, nasty undertow right now in this country. And I saw it a bit up here and when a few weeks ago in the Twin Cities at the, or not a few weeks, a few days ago, just at the end of the state fair, there was some incidents. There was one gun incident on the fairground, and then there was a gun incident outside the fairground. And there were some fights there. You know, Saturday night, lots of drinking. When people start drinking at 9 a.m., it has a tendency of things going downhill. But needless to say, there's people who are saying it was, you know, gang kids and stuff like this. And they haven't really released too much information about the individuals, but it did not stop an element of the conservative movement to start making statements, which on one side of it, I started saying, okay, do you actually understand what you're saying? And then it kind of hit me. Oh yeah, they know exactly what they're saying. And it's kind of scary. Their argument, their statement was, we should lock them all up, build as many prisons as it takes, and get those people off the streets. So the argument is, wait a minute here, are you saying that any minority individual between the ages of, say, 12 and 22 should just be rounded up and put into a prison? Because you think they're all criminals, so henceforth, all of them need to be arrested. And yeah, they do. That's what they want. And that's kind of what DeSantis is doing here. The reason why Ron DeSantis will never admit he's made a mistake here, that these people might be innocent, is because this is the new rise in the Republican Party. This is this new element. And it's not everything. We had Michael Broadcorp, if you didn't hear the 4 o'clock hour yesterday, where he's having a war with, you know, he's a Republican, a moderate Republican political commentator. He's at war with the current Republican lieutenant governor candidate in the state of Minnesota. It's not the entire Republican Party, but there is this far right element of it, which has had some success in going into small counties and scaring school boards into, you know, basically preaching hate and taking away teachers' rights. They've gone into county commissioners' offices and demanded recounts. They have basically gotten and made it illegal for rainbow flags to be flying and things like that. And they basically go on out there and almost encourage these militant groups to basically scare people into their way of thinking. That is what Ron DeSantis is appealing to. That is what I experienced when I talked to people after what happened up here at the Minnesota State Fair. This mentality of we, and I think part of it comes from this, we got close with January 6th. So if we're going to do this, it's the time is now. And there is this mentality of a white class over the minority class. And this is what this far right extremist of the party wants. Now, much like a lot of Republican politicians who spent the primary sprinting to the extremist right, who are now trying to say, hey, you remember what I said? No abortions ever. What I meant was I'm for women having a choice. Or went out there and said, Donald Trump was robbed of his election victory, and now are saying, hey, I never said that January 6th was justified. This is where they're at. And DeSantis is going to, it's going to be interesting to see Ron DeSantis try to soften his don't say gay. And I mean, he's going to, trust me, I can already see it. He's going to have his minions screaming, "Don't you dare call it Don't Say Gay." Yeah, that's what it is. It's the Don't Say Gay bill. He's going to try his hardest to try to soften his tone when it gets to a point where he's running in a general election. But the reality is this is who they are. And I got a heck of a story coming up here in the 4 o'clock hour that shows you this is exactly who these people are. There is a lot of this in there. This, and even the moderate Republicans, even the ones who just are angry about what Trump's gone on with Mar-a-Lago and the documents, or has been upset about what happened on January 6th, there's a lot of them who at the very least aren't completely and totally against these ideas. Because they're not sitting out there saying, wait, you want to just lock up all minority people? You just want to just lock them up and throw away the key and you think that that's a solution? That's insanity. They're not saying that. And so unless Democrats get out there and start really hammering on this extremism, which is starting to rise, this undertow, this undercurrent, well, it's going to get really ugly in this country. We'll take a break. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday, 952-946-6205. Watch DeSantis, man. And the reality is the more that the Democrats do not call him out right now, I mean, beyond what's going on in Florida, I mean, this is just ugly. And trust me when I say there is a element of the Republican Party that just wants to lock up all black people, all Latino people, all Native Americans, and basically say, see, we're tough on crime. And that is their mentality. And DeSantis is just pandering to that element. And that is not a fringe mentality within the right anymore. It is not. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Speaking of which, of course, I mentioned earlier that gun incident they had over at the Minnesota State Fair. I think there are times where we do not do a very good job of addressing the problem at the root base cause. I'll give you a great example of this. There are a lot of people who get upset, a lot of Republicans who scream about, you know, undocumented workers. Why aren't you going out there and taking care of the undocumented workers? That sort of thing. The reality is there's a real, you know, if you really do want to stop, you know, undocumented workers, go after the companies. Pick a sacrificial lamb, a major corporation in this country, and do a morning raids across the country. And they have their due diligence to make sure that the employees they have are, you know, have the documentation. Now, before anyone gets upset with me, this country can't survive without undocumented workers. I think we need to do a much better job of welcoming in strangers from strange lands. Jeez, where did I hear that before? Oh, that's right. Jeez. Anyway, I think we have a lot we can do with that, but I'm just going with the Republican narrative. And so, if you want to really stop this, one of the easiest ways you could do that is to raid these companies and give them the maximum fine for every violation. So just go to one of these processing companies and go after them. The reason why they don't is because the people that run the processing companies who need those undocumented workers, who knowingly employ those undocumented workers, are paying the politicians. And so the politicians don't ever want to raid the company. They just want to sit outside the company and scream about undocumented workers, even though the company that basically bankrolls that Republican politician needs the undocumented workers. Steve King was great at that. There was so many undocumented workers in his district that he kept screaming against, but the reality is he never once wanted any of the companies that bankrolled him to ever get raided because he knew exactly what he was doing. He was a hypocrite. He was a massive hypocrite. So you see, there's a tendency, if people don't want to look at the problem because there, what the problem is the company's hiring the people, but you don't want to go after them because that's the people that bankroll Republicans. Once again, undocumented workers, trust me, this country would cavitate without the undocumented worker. They do a lot of jobs most American citizens will not do. I think we find a way to get them into the roles a lot faster. Now, that being said, we have this tendency whenever there's a shooting anywhere in this country to scream about, we need to get these guns off the streets. I agree. I agree. But when they say that, they're only saying that. Now, when Republicans say this sort of thing, they say this because they are basically trying to put out a talking point without really any substance. Because they don't want the guns rounded up. They just basically want white people to be scared. Black people got guns. That's kind of how they do it. But I agree that the guns, you know, illegal guns should be rounded up. Now, sure, whenever someone gets arrested, we can confiscate the gun, melt it down, as, you know, these gun kooks sit there and weep in tears. But I got a much better plan. And the reality is this would dry up pretty much a lot of the guns on the streets almost instantaneously. If you are illegally carrying a gun, that is going to be an automatic 4-year term in prison. All right. Now you say to yourself, wow, Matt, that's pretty harsh. Yeah, it is. But, you know, guns, these are dangerous things. We should not just let these things out willy-nilly. So if you have one, that's a 4-year sentence. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. If you're guilty of selling guns illegally in the United States, that's a lifetime sentence. Now, right now, even though that actually is not a bad plan, and I mean, maybe not a lifetime sentence, but you get my point, a very strong, long sentence that if you have sold a gun illegally in this country, that you go to jail for a long time. Because is the crime really the person with the gun, or is the crime the person that supplied the gun to him and 14 other people that committed crimes? It's the guy that supplied the guns. And yeah, there is a lot of white guys in Indiana buying up a lot of guns and running them into Chicago and selling them on the street. For God's sakes, I just had the story here when that neighbor kid wanted to sell a pair of skis on Facebook and was offered a gun as opposed to the money he was asking for. There is this mentality that guns can be traded like baseball cards, and that is not right. So, if you are found to be illegally selling a gun, we lock you up for the rest of your freaking life because you have no concern about human life, so we'd better get rid of you. And if you did that once, talk about sending a message. You find some racist piece of crud out in Indiana that's basically buying up a bunch of guns and running them into the inner city so he can make a few quick bucks. You get that guy and you lock him up in jail. I guarantee you there won't be a lot of guns on the streets because there won't be people supplying them because you've just made it a deterrent. And before anyone comes back, it's like, well, I want to trade my Uncle Cletus for... No, you don't do that anymore. It's a gun, you moron. It's not a baseball card. You cannot illegally sell a gun to someone else. It has to go through the proper channels. And if you do, you go to jail. Period. Well, that's a... Wow, Matt, that's a pretty tough on gun policy. That sounds like it'd work. Yeah, no Republican will go with it because the reality is they don't want to stop the guns because they sure like trying to scare people with crime stories, don't they? Indeed. Lynette is in Chaska. Let's get her in before we get to the break. 952-946-6205. Hello, Lynette.
Hello, Matt. I called my representative Tom Emmer's office today. Basically, what prompted me to call was his statements on women's reproductive rights and comparing it to Chinese genocide. And I did ask the person I was talking to. I called both offices, and I said, you know, go look on and see what it looks like to live in Hong Kong if you're a poor person and or an elderly person. And there is such a thing called overpopulation. And it does affect people in a really negative way. And my main point whenever I call his office is I'm sorry to waste both of our time today. I know he's supposed to be my representative, but as a liberal-minded person who does believe that women have rights and many other people have rights, am I invisible? I mean, do I deserve to die? I said, is he coming over to kill us? Whoever does not agree with him?
Lynette, if I can chime in here. No, he doesn't. He does not care about you at all. Thanks, Lynette. I appreciate the phone call. Republicans could care less about you if they represent you and you are not a Republican. They do not care in the least. They hate you. That is a Republican today. Wisconsin folks, Devil Radio coming up. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hour 2 is up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, hour number 2 today. Had to go through. Patrick, did you were here on Monday. We talked about my daughter and the torn ACL and all that stuff, right?
Yes, I was here.
Got a surgery date now and stuff. Got to go through all this again. That's a long recovery, man. Okay, so what takes longer, Tommy John surgery or ACL surgery?
Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, that's like a year and a half, isn't it?
Yeah, at least a year.
It's, yeah, a year to 9 months. 9 months to a year for ACL. Ugh, just brutal. And yet this is... people are telling me is like, you know, it's soccer and cheerleader and the two ones that really get most injuries. So, God, just having to deal with this. It's been a long week. It's been a long week. Tonight, I'm happy with myself. I got slow cooker meatballs out there. I'm going to make some meatball subs. I'm just going to sit down there. I got Rams and Bills. I'll watch that. I'm rewatching what could be. In my mind, it is one of the greatest science fiction series I've ever seen, and I think it possibly might be some of the best science fiction I've seen in the last 20 years, and that's Altered Carbon Season 1. You ever watch Altered Carbon on Netflix?
No, I don't have Netflix. Oh. So.
If you get the chance, if you get it on a DVD or something like that, watch it. That is, Altered Carbon Season 1 was one of the most... amazingly complex. I love science fiction that doesn't feel like it has to dumb things down. And it's based on this incredible concept that they figured out to do long space travel. They basically created a disc that is, you know, basically downloads your brain, for lack of a better way to say it. It downloads your brain onto this disc so you can basically do long distance space travel and be able to, you know, get there, you know, by using what they call sleeves, which are just basically other human suits. And basically you just insert the disc into the next suit and it's the same person, only in a different suit. It's a great concept because what they have figured out is not only that initial concept of doing something like that, but that you could, that of course this is technology that would be abused by the wealthy. And so you have people that basically live forever and just keep inserting themselves into a new clone. And it is just so brilliantly well done. I've been enjoying it again. I remember when I watched it, I said, was that as good as I thought it was? And yeah, it really is top notch. The second season wasn't bad with Mackie from the Captain America movies, Anthony Mackie. He that was okay, but the first season was as good as it gets and really dark. It's not for kids. But I've been enjoying that. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to look to find something to kind of just zone out tonight after, yeah. And I get medical bills. Oh, boy. Especially last year was a big medical bill year. Last year was a big medical bill year for me. And this year, we were looking great. We were looking so good. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. By the way, I was talking about guns and basically how we should, you know, if you supply a gun, if you illegally sell a gun to someone, you should go to jail for the rest of your life. Just be done with it. You'll clear it. I guarantee you illegal gun sales will cease almost overnight if the punishment is that. And I know that because there are a lot of Republicans out there, it's like, no, don't go after the guys that are selling it. Go after the guys that are using it. No. Get after the guys that are selling it because that will dry up all the guns real fast. The reality is Republicans don't want to do that because they want the guns on the street, because that's the only way they can get people to vote for them is to try to scare people into voting for them by saying, crime, Minneapolis crime, North Minneapolis crime, black people crime. That's what they say. That is a Republican standard. So if you just get rid of the guns, then all of a sudden it's like, we got to be able to scare people. That's all. If we actually have to campaign on the issues, they won't help us. And as Lynette called in last hour and said, you think Tom Emmer cares about you as a Democrat in his district? Of course not. You could have a natural disaster hit your house in his district as a Democrat, and his mentality is, I'm not going to help you at all. Same with Stauber. Stauber doesn't care about you. If you're a Democrat up in the North District, he couldn't care less. Sure, that's not fair. No. I've heard from multiple people who have called your office for help. And you said, didn't you vote Republican? Are you a registered Republican? No. Don't call us. Click. That sort of mentality. So, no, they don't care. They only care about themselves. So they're not going to actually do the things that they need to do to keep people safe, because down deep inside, they want those guns on the street so they can try to scare people into voting for them. Speaking of guns, a 25-year-old man in Minneapolis has been federally charged for being in possession and manufacturing auto sears, devices that are used to convert a semi-automatic firearm into a machine gun. The U.S. Attorney for Minnesota, Andrew Luger, says that Aaron Malicato had 4 3D printers at his residence and was in possession of several 3D printed auto sears. In addition to the homemade devices, authorities say Cato was in possession of the parts to make up at least 10 more devices. Obviously not a good guy. Customs and Borders agents also intercepted a package sent from Taiwan to Minneapolis destined for Cato, and law enforcement conducted a controlled delivery of the package. They basically, that guy should go to jail for probably the rest of his life. He should. All you're doing is you're creating weapons to kill human beings. And you may say, it's like, oh, that's not what, yes, you are. That is what you're doing. Why do, we get so angry at the individual who uses the gun in a crime, converts a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon. We get so angry with them, but we don't get angry at the people that are basically making sure those guns pour into those cities left and right. The ability for them to convert a weapon into a far more lethal death machine. Well, you go after them. You lock up. If you go buy a whole bunch of guns in one state and take them across a state line and try to sell them in a different state, you're caught. You get, guess what? You're going to jail for the rest of your life. Tomorrow, there wouldn't be. I would say, 95% of the guns would be off the streets within a year. Think about that. But no, Republicans will never put that forward. It's only about the individual criminal. Well, that guy who was selling those guns illegally, he's just a small business owner. He's just trying to make a buck. You can't get mad at him just because he sold guns out of the back of his car in an alleyway in the city doesn't mean he knew that those guns were going to be used illegally. Dear Lord. Do they even hear themselves sometimes? I don't think they do. Why are car thieves going after Kias and Hyundais? Any idea? Do you have a Kia or a Hyundai?
No, I don't. But I had heard, and I don't want to quote because I don't have a story in front of me, but there's sort of a technical flaw with them that it's much easier to steal those than it is to steal other brands.
Okay. So really? Okay. Updated data from the St. Paul Police Department shows 115 Hyundais, 123 Kias were reported stolen in July and August. That's a 1,090% increase of the same period last year. The two brands accounted for nearly half of all stolen cars in St. Paul in July and August. These car brands are being targeted by thieves across the country because of, as you said, design flaws that make them relatively easy to steal. This is an Axios Twin Cities story. A Kia spokesperson told Axios the problem is most prominent in the Midwest. No, okay. I think the problem is most prominent with your car. how about you make it so it's not so clap on the clapper? Run away, off you go. Yeah. Is that what the problem is? You've created the clapper car? A St. Paul man whose Kia was stolen in August recently filed a class action lawsuit against the car maker. Similar lawsuits have been filed in other states. Hyundai is telling customers they want a specialized security kit to protect their vehicle. They will need to pay for it. I'm sure it will be free after the lawsuit gets you. Otherwise, officials suggest trying a steering wheel lock. And that's not it's just the way things are. And once again, that's it is what it is. If you make it easy for them, they'll figure it out. That's kind of how things go with these this crime nowadays. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. One other story I want to get to here before I get the break, because this is becoming an epidemic. Because as much as Republicans want to scare people into thinking that crime and bad things only happen in the cities, I'm going to go back to that Bloomberg story that we've talked about a few times, which the guy went through and actually did the numbers, and he showed that, and he was based in New York City. He was based in New York City. And he did the numbers, and he said, you know, because he always hears from these people that live in rural America that it's far more dangerous in the city. And when you look at the county-by-county numbers, and you do it per population, it is far more dangerous, not even close, far more dangerous in rural America than it is in any inner city. It is. It is far more dangerous. But because Republicans only want to scare you with gun crime from North Minneapolis, they won't address these issues. We've talked about driving. My God, the epidemic of car deaths in the state, including in outstate Minnesota. But when you bring that up with a Republican, what comes out of their mouth is, hey, I don't know, we really can go on out there and, round up those people. You want to get the need for speed. Love Top Gun. Hey, that's what you got. But you can't deny that there's an epidemic of deaths on the roadways in Minnesota, including in outstate Minnesota, and especially in outstate Minnesota. Well, there's another type of death that's happening out there where it almost seems like every freaking day there's another story. An 84-year-old woman died in an ATV crash in Wright County, officials said Wednesday. The rollover wreck occurred Tuesday along a soybean field near Northeast Edmondson Avenue and 89th Street in Monticello. The police identified the woman as Elizabeth Ross of Monticello. Apparently, the chief deputy said Ross was riding too close to a steep ditch that caused the ATV to roll over and land on top of Ross. She was pronounced dead at the scene, he said. The initial call to emergency dispatch came at 7:29 p.m., but officials say the crash actually happened well earlier in the day. Ross was discovered by a relative who went searching for her after the relative could not reach Ross by cell phone. The relative used an app which pinged the location of her phone, and then she found her later that day. Another sad story. But we have yet again, another story of an ATV death. And part of the problem is that the way that these things are sold is not as if it's, hey, this is a motorized vehicle. You need to be careful with it. You need to make sure you're careful with the ATV. And I know that, ATV dealers will say, now we are very clear about safety. But yeah, but look at your things. It shows people speeding down roads. And what they do is they don't tell you people is, you can't just do that. You can't just fly down a road. You can't just fly down some dirt path. You have to, you sure as heck can't do it drinking, which unfortunately, some of the times these ATV accidents include alcohol involved. But the mere nature of this, take a look at this woman here, this tragic case here. She's just going down the road, but because she got too close to the edge, it rolled on her. And she died. This is an epidemic. This is almost a daily occurrence in the state of Minnesota. An ATV death. And I talked about this a few weeks ago where I talked about, do you remember? I remember in the 80s, for a while they sold these three-wheel vehicles with big fat tires. Those things were, my God, how many kids died on those? And they called them. They basically made them illegal. You couldn't sell them anymore because they were that dangerous. Well, what you do is you go on out there and they make it seem like, hey, this is just a necessity for life. Or I'm putting all the tools in the back of the ATV. We're going to go on out and fix the poles on the back 40. But then you show them, we're flying across the country. And the reality is what most people use them for is just going out there and whipping around. I'm not saying that there aren't some people that use them in a much more of a utility situation. But you want to know the truth is, those people aren't dying in the freaking ATVs unless there's a real tragic accident. It's they're not the ones that are using excessive speed. They're not the ones who are going out there and drinking while driving. They're using them while at their farm or whatever. I'm talking about the people that these have been sold to as toys. And if you treat something like this as a toy, this is what happens. And I've been on ATVs. They can be fun. But the reality is they're also a motorized vehicle that if you do not treat them with respect, it can kill you. And it has done so over and over and over again this year in Minnesota. This is something that whenever these deaths happen, they're not in Minneapolis. They're not in St. Paul. These deaths are happening out in outstate Minnesota, and the stunned silence that you hear from Republicans speaks volumes about what they're trying to do to fix this. If this involved inner city minority kids, every Republican would be, I've got this bill stating there has to be mandatory driver's training. They have to go through a background check. They've got to go through 40 hours of classroom. They've got to go with an instructor for 100 hours. This is how we keep these people safe. That's what they'd be like. That's what they'd be like. But when it happens to white people out in rural Minnesota, it's like, hey, you just don't understand country. I understand dead and alive. I do understand that. It boggles my mind. It's heartbreaking to see yet another ATV death. And yet not one person in this damn state is trying to do a damn thing to try to say, well, maybe we should try to stop people from killing themselves with the freaking ATVs. Maybe. What about that? It's tragic. Dave is in Minneapolis. Let's get him in before we go to the break. Dave, thanks for holding. Welcome onto the show.
Hey, Matt. I love your show, as you well know.
Thank you, sir.
Anyway, you have the best show. Anyway, in all of Minnesota, as far as I'm concerned.
Wow, thanks,
so
man.
I wanted to tell you a little story about I had a car stolen. This is back in, I guess it'd been March 2013. I live in a high-rise building. It's like a block walk between the Isles and Calhoun. Pretty Makoska. Anyway, so we just put in LED lighting to light up our garage. We had fluorescent, but it was dark as heck. And we just had put in a camera system on a Friday, 5 p.m. I drove in, and they were just putting the vinyl bolt in for the last LED light. And then I went and I was Bar Louie back then in Uptown with a friend. I only drank root beer. But the next morning I had to meet a friend. And I go to the garage down in the basement and it turns out I'm looking for my car. I thought, did somebody playing an April Fool's joke early on me? Anyway, it was the weekend of the state hockey tournament. Anyway, I look around and it says, okay, my car has not been moved. Nobody's playing a joke. It's gone. And so I contacted caretaker's building. He looked at the video, and sure enough, there's a guy came through the front door. Had some strange tool that got him through the front door. We've since fixed that, so nobody can do that. And then somebody came along. This is around 9:30 at night. And somebody came along, and he went up the stairwell because there's still. And then he's walking right through the main lobby, and then he heard somebody. And then he comes back out, and then he goes into the garage, and he's looking at this Pontiac Sunbird. He's just, like, eyeing it for a while. And the people that own that winter in Florida, so they were gone. It was like a layer of dust on it. Anyway, well, he decided that didn't seem to be what he wanted. And then he went over to the left of that vehicle. There was a Honda Civic. And he tried to start that thing up. Well, those people, winter in California, and they unplugged their battery. He tore that car to pieces in the interior trying to get that thing started. Well, then he gave up, and then he saw my car, 97 Honda Accord. And back then, they said, oh, that's a car that they get stolen, put in chop shops,
yeah,
for their parts.
You know, I remember those Hondas in the 90s, man. Those were real big targets.
Yeah, yeah. And I had like over 180,000 miles on mine. And it's like, wow. It's like everybody told me, Dave, your car is gone. It's gone. You'll never see that car again. Anyway, so we did caretaker had a video of him because we're just putting that system. We gave it to the police. And they go, yeah, we know that guy.
Oh, that's Phil.
That video of a place, you know, at the building next door as well, you know, their garage. But anyway, so it turned out, and then I get a call from police and, you know, Bloomington to say, hey, did you, anything happen with your vehicle? He goes, we found your badge, you know, your work badge that you used to keep in the car because it was just convenient, you know, to get in it. But anyway, and then eventually, but I was closing in on buying a new Honda Accord to replace it. I'd settled with the insurance company. They're ready to write me a check. And then all of a sudden I get this call from the St. Paul impound lot. Say, hey, we found your car. It was sitting over, I don't know, somewhere in your rice. And in a no parking zone,
mm-hmm.
the battery was gone. The only thing that was gone was the battery, but it stunk to heaven like it was some sort of, I don't know,
okay. Okay. Someone with a little body odor issue then.
I think it was a little more than body odor. But anyway, happy ending. They did catch the guy. He had also stolen other things. He'd sold, like, I don't know, $10,000 a safe that had like $10,000. He got like a 4-year prison term. But it did have a happy ending, but it was a strange thing. But I thought I was going to get a new car, and I didn't. I got my old car back.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the story there. He's going to the White Castle on Rice Street. That's what I mean. Who doesn't love a White Castle, man? I mean, can we get a Crave case right now, Patrick? I'm all over that action.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's just play a longer song. We'll be back in a little bit. Let's take a break. 952-946-6205. We may be back after this commercials. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. They got his car back. Sounds like it needs a scrubbing. What were you doing? What were you doing with his car? And that, by the way, one of the things that, you know, when Republicans talk about crime, you know, they never talk about, you know, this, where, you know, someone stole a thing and they caught the guy. And yeah, they don't talk about that. And the car was returned. And yes, it was inconvenient, but there you go. I mean, it's funny. My parents, when I was a kid, they went out to Vermont. We lived in Rhode Island at that time. And they went up to Vermont for they're up in the Green Mountains and they're doing some hiking. And they parked their car. I mean, this was basically a parking lot out in the middle of the woods. There was no other cars around. They went out hiking, came back, someone had busted in the car and, you know, gotten at the stuff. And this is back in the 70s. So yeah, they kind of stashed their purses underneath the seats, but of course someone was looking for them and they got their stuff. They ended up, you know, being able to drive the car though. They still had the car keys and they were able to go and drive and get some help there. But still, it's kind of one of those things where it's no one sat there and said, you need to have a military presence in that parking lot. Where's the governor of Vermont? It's his fault personally. It's his fault personally. I'm Michelle Tafoya. I pay for this message. With your career. No, but it's... It just does happen. That's just part of society. And trust me, there's plenty of crime that happens out in rural America. Oh, there's plenty of crime that happens out in rural America. God, I mean, we had our cabin was busted into one time, and they caught the guy because they tried to pawn the stuff out. I mean, it was okay. How stupid are you to try to do that up there? Because there's like 12 pawn shops. So it was pretty easy for the police to do, well, here's all the stuff that they were stolen. Who sold it to? So, oh, is that person over there? Okay, we're going to arrest them. And scene. It does happen. It doesn't mean it's nice. It doesn't mean that people deserve to get off the hook. No, of course not. But I mean, it just, that does happen. It happens in rural America, happens in the cities. It just does. And it sucks. As a person who's had stuff stolen, it sucks. But I never, you know, only political psychopaths basically sit there when their car was stolen and, damn you, Governor Walz. What are you supposed to do? Set up gun turrets every block? I shouldn't give the Republicans any ideas. That's but it's just, yeah, it's an unfortunate element of it. Now, we're going to take a break. Come on back. Remember yesterday we were talking about the Oath Keepers, and there's a politician in the state that's a member of the Oath Keepers? We've got a name. We've got a name. I'll share that little gem with you in a second. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. From the Minnesota Reformer. Outstanding work, my friends. The names of 514 Minnesotans appear to an elite membership roster of the Oath Keepers, a violent extremist group thought to play a key role in January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, according to a new report released by the Anti-Defamation League. Among those names, 6 law enforcement officers, 3 members of the military, 2 first responders, a reflection of the group's efforts to recruit people with military and law enforcement experience. Also on the Oath Keepers membership list, 1 politician, Representative Donald Raleigh, first-term Republican House representative from Blaine. But Raleigh, catch this, okay? I think we're about to hear this is a huge misunderstanding. But Raleigh says in an interview that he disavows the group and its beliefs. Now, mind you, he didn't disavow the group and its beliefs, at least to my knowledge, after January 6th. No, when someone called up and said, hey, you involved with this group? Whoa, yeah, that's right. No, I disavow with them. That's what it sounds like, at least. And that he only signed up for a membership years ago as part of a project to conduct market research on organizations targeting veterans. So, you know, when are you saying that when the Girl Scouts come by to sell you cookies because they're targeting veterans for cookie sales, you sign up and you become a Girl Scout? Like. This is called tap dancing. Dun, da dun, da 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 dun, da dun, da dun. Now, well, they do have those. Have you seen the sashes with all the little patches? Oh, those are great. I would love to. If I could get a sash with a lot of patches, I'd be all over that action. Okay, in 2013, during a process of co-founding a company called Trust Vets, which works to connect veterans to business opportunities, Raleigh signed up using his business email address to a number of different veterans groups. He provided the Reformer with emails showing membership confirmations from 2013 and 2014 for VetFriends.com, the Association of the United States Army, and the Air Force Association. Now, to my knowledge, none of those people, organizations, stormed the Capitol on January 6th, at least to my knowledge. As part of that effort, he said he also signed up for an Oath Keepers membership. Their pitch was, at a time, was for veterans. One of the things that caught my eye was a sign-up packet that was designed or packaged by disabled veterans that seemed innocuous to us. It's fine, but you signed up. He added, we signed up for a whole bunch of these different organizations because we wanted to know what was interesting, cool marketing they were doing. In its report, the ADL notes that an individual's inclusion in the Oath Keeper database is not proof that they were or still are an Oath Keeper, that they hold or held all the same of Oath Keeper's ideology or viewpoints, or that they actively participated in Oath Keeper's activities. But, they add, it is important to remember that the Oath Keepers have exposed extremism since their founding, and the fact was not enough to deter these individuals from signing up. And that's the truth. I ran into, was it the last time I did the state fair? At the AM 950 booth. I ran into a guy who was an oath keeper, and he had, you know, he had his shirt on and he's talking about this. And he, you know, he kind of came at me and he was like, oh, you guys don't talk about these things. And I said, well, and basically he said, you disrespect veterans. I said, well, listen here, you idiot. I'm a veteran myself. I'm a disabled vet. Thank you very much. You're welcome, by the way. And, you know, he's like, oh, I didn't realize that. I said, yeah, you should actually, you know, before you convince yourself of your narrative, you should actually find out if it's true or not. But that being said, you basically, he came at me and he was talking about this. And he said, well, we believe in the Constitution. We believe in all these things. And we believe things are doing things right. And I said, well, then why don't you just sign up for the military? They believe in the Constitution. They're fighting for American freedom. I mean, that seems like what you should want to do. Why are you signing up for this group? He says, well, sometimes we disagree with the government. And if we have to take up arms, we will, because we've got all the arms. Now, at that point, I said, we're done talking, because that doesn't sound like a, you know, they've got, have you seen their gift catalog? It's delightful. No, that's not an organization I want to be anywhere near. And that was, what, 2014, 2015? I mean, it's these guys are extremists. And that's just that. And it's not like they didn't see that this was something they kept secret until January 6th. This is something that had always been out there. So, and once again, to be fair to Raleigh, he might not have ever known what he was doing, which just makes him an idiot. It does. It does. If you are signing up to have a membership in an organization, you have no idea what they stand for, then you don't really have a lot of leeway to say, I didn't realize they were bad guys. You didn't? Well, maybe you should have checked before you signed up. That's the part about this whole thing. It's that either, okay, fine, I'll take your argument that you had no idea that the Oath Keepers were a anti-American, you know, and as we see now, a terrorist group. Fine. I'll just say that you're an idiot because you signed up for a group you had no idea what the heck they stood for. And you didn't do the basic research it would take to figure out, it's like, holy God, these guys are extremists. So either you're an idiot or you knew what they were there for. And that's just the reality. I mean, those are the kind of the options. By the time Raleigh signed up for the organization in 2013, the Oath Keepers had established a reputation as a fringe group with some violent tendencies. Multiple members had been arrested on charges ranging from weapons to explosives to sexual assault of a minor, according to a 2010 article by the Southern Poverty Law Center. That would be 2010, 3 years before he signed up for this organization, which he apparently has no idea was actually a terrorist group. In 2012, the ADL labeled the Oath Keepers as an anti-government extremist group. The group's revolutionary rhetoric and militia-style organization was drawing to the attention of mainstream news outlets, including ABC, Reuters, and New York Times. They'd also received coverage in law enforcement outlet Police Magazine, as well as right-wing news sources. So the information was out there. He just basically apparently signed up for a membership and didn't realize what he was doing. That's his argument. That's what his story is. Jake Hyman, a representative for ADL, said they would not be disclosing the names of other Minnesotans who appear in the database in order to protect the identities of private citizens. The database, along with the chat logs and other materials, was individually obtained by distributed by Denial of Secrets, an independent investigative reporting group. Here's where I have a huge problem with that. There are police officers who are involved here. There are, and going back to your list here of this, the people here that were involved, six law enforcement officers, three members of the military, which I'm going to just presume is someone over at Fort Snelling, or maybe a recruiter, I guess, two first responders. You don't want to give up the names of these other people, but at the same time, you have people who are interacting with others in an official capacity, whether that's police or a first responder. And I would want to know if my police officer in my town is an extremist belonging to an anti-American terrorist group. Call me wacky crazy. Call me, oh yeah, you want to infringe on their rights. No, I want to know who's part of a terrorist anti-American group who tried to overthrow the government. Now, once again, we're talking about when he signed up in 2013, there was clearly enough evidence that this was a bad group of guys.
I can say today, they tried to overthrow the government of the United States. They tried to overthrow the government of the United States. They're an anti-American terrorist group. I think we all deserve to know the names of the first responders and the police officers who are part of this terrorist organization. I absolutely. I also want to bring up the question, though, in regards to he didn't realize he was still part of the group. Really? Someone, and what I consider and I have labeled a hilarious joke, signed me up for the NRA. They gave me a 1-year membership. I got their magazine. They are a delusional bag of cats. I mean, that is just, yikes. They're a gun kook central. It was, by the way, whoever signed me up, brilliant. That was well done. Now, that being said, I still get mail today from the NRA, even though it's been years since that membership was active. You're telling me you haven't gotten, now granted, you said you had the email from a work email. All right, we'll just presume that work email is gone. But generally, when you sign up for these organizations, the fact that we know you're in Minnesota is you put down an address. You're saying you didn't get one mailer? So say it's January 15th, and I'm just a hypothetical situation. January 15th, 2021, a little more than a week plus after the Oath Keepers are part of a terrorist attack on the capital of the United States to overthrow the government of the United States. And all of a sudden you get a piece of mail from the Oath Keepers and you're like, what the heck? Oh my God. Oh, I signed up back in 2013 when we were signing up for Veterans Group. I must have signed up for Oath Keepers. Oh my God, I got to cancel this. Because that doesn't sound like what happened here. What it sounds like, it's just, all of a sudden you had a lot of excuses when you were called. And once again, I don't know. I mean, are they mailing things to them? I don't know. But these organizations generally do. It's a constant fundraising thing. It's a constant renew your membership. At the very least, you'd think that you'd be getting renew membership mailings. So, I think that they should release the name of the other citizens. And I'm having a hard time believing that he had no idea he was still part of this group. None of the Minnesota law enforcement officers appear on the roster were police chiefs or sheriffs. Hyman did add, the ADL has been in contact with each law enforcement agency affected by our report, and we continue to work with them in addressing the challenges of extremism within their ranks. Raleigh says he has no idea about what the Oath Keepers are up to today. Wow. So he's going with the stupid, playing stupid thing. Here we go. You don't, seriously, with the attack on the Capitol, with the fact that the leader of the Oath Keepers is about to go on trial, your idea says he has no idea about what the Oath Keepers are up to today. You are saying you never saw any coverage of January 6th riots? You didn't see any of that. Wow. He did add that from what I've heard, they've taken a very dark turn, and I absolutely did not support anything that has to do with that insurrection. So one side, he said, I have no idea what they're up to. On the other side is, well, they're, oh, boy, God. Yeah, I have no idea what that dark, angry group of people are up to. Yeah. You seem to have an idea about this. Unlike other officers who have proudly advertised their affiliation with the fringe group, Raleigh has not promoted or spoken favorably about the Oath Keepers in public appearances. Part of his reelection pitch to voters in his district is that voting record has been very, very bipartisan. Yeah. I'm really a Democrat. Don't throw me out of office. I wasn't against Roe v. Wade. Don't look into my past comments about these things when the Republicans were a better brand. He did acknowledge in 2021 that he went to a South Dakota conference where prominent election denier Mike Lindell repeatedly made false claims about the 2020 election was stolen. Raleigh said he came away unconvinced of Lindell's claims and told his Republican colleagues that when he returned home, he added he believed Joe Biden was elected legitimately, had no concerns about the integrity of the 2020 elections. Boy, isn't this... So wait a minute here. You went to a Lindell event. You went to a Lindell event
which, by the way, if I remember correctly, wasn't that broadcast, the South Dakota one? So you didn't have to go. You could have just watched it. But you actually went there, and now you're just like, wait a second here. I'm really bipartisan. Joe Biden won. The 2020 election was fair. I have no idea what the Oath-Keepers are up to. Although I condemn them for all the things I have no idea that they've done. Okay. We believe you. So, okay, once again, fine. I'll buy your argument, Raleigh. You had no idea what the Oath Keepers were, which, once again, it's not like there wasn't plenty of evidence that the Oath Keepers were a violent anti-American group when you signed up with them in 2013. We've just gone over that. This Minnesota Reformer story breaks that down very clearly. There was plenty of evidence this was an anti-American terrorist group back then with a lot of freaking issues. Fine. I'll buy that. Well, then you're an idiot because you signed up for an organization you had no idea what they were. And you deserve the criticism if you are that stupid to sign up for an organization you had no idea what they stood for. And here you are still today, even though they've been covered extensively in the news, that they tried to overthrow the government, trying to play the card like, I have no idea what they've been up to lately, but I still condemn them for all their actions. Come on, man. I'm not saying you are a proud member of the Oath Keepers, but this is... Yeah, you're tap dancing. Good luck with all that. 9-5. But hey, no, you're bipartisan. Oh, where did anyone get the idea that all you will do is, if you win as a representative, is to do what the Republican leadership tells you exactly what to do? Where did that idea come from? Oh, that's right. Every single time the Republicans get control of either the House or the Senate in Minnesota, that's where it comes from. That all of a sudden you will forego all your bipartisanship and only vote as you're told. You vote Republican, you don't have representation. You have orders being handed down on high. 9-5, and that's just how the Republicans operate in the House and the Senate nowadays. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's speaking of Lindell, I got a gem. Sad. It's a sad day. It's a sad day. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Just because, I mean, okay, one thing just really quick on Raleigh. Once again, your argument is, I didn't know, I had no idea the anti-American terrorist group that I was joining was an anti-American terrorist group, but yet you still signed up for it. Well, that makes you just an idiot. And seriously, it does. Ugh. And I just, yeah. But okay, fine. Now you're scrambling. I guess fine. You didn't know what this group was about. Then why the hell would you sign up for them? Why would you become a member? And I have some serious questions on whether or not, did you get any mailings or anything like that? Did you have anything that came to your door that told you you were still a member of the Oath Keepers, especially after January 6th? That's an interesting question. If you're watching on screen right now, I've got my good friend who's taking a little nap on my lap right here, Mike Lindell. This is the Mike Lindell cutout. I think we got this one at Ridgedale. This one, we went into the store and said, can we buy one of the cutouts? Sure. We did. Brought it home, you sweet little angel. Let me get those crumbs out of your mustache. All right. Mike Lindell's last remaining mall store appears to have closed its doors. The sign has been taken down from the MyPillow location at Rosedale Center. Twitter user Paul Merrill posted the photo of the shuttered space with items being taken out of it. If it is indeed closed, it leaves only the company's official outlet store in Shakopee. The company previously had other stores and malls, including Southdale and Maplewood Mall. So I guess we got it at Southdale. Ridgedale, bringing the news, reached out to the Rosedale Center for confirmation on Wednesday. It remains unclear what's next for the soon-to-be empty space. In June, CEO Mike Lindell announced that Walmart was dropping its products from its big box stores. Lindell claimed that time that the move came despite high sales numbers and offers by him to allow Walmart to sell his products at a lower price. He claimed that he was a victim of cancel culture, blamed Walmart for the decision. However, Walmart spokesperson told Bring Me the News at the time that the products would still be available on its website as of Wednesday. That appears to be true. Bring Me the News reached out to MyPillow for more information on the recent store closure, but have not heard back. MyPillow has seen its fortunes fall since Lindell became involved in the movement to falsely claim that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from Trump. Dominion Voting Systems filed a lawsuit against Lindell and MyPillow for defamation last year, alleging Lindell knowingly spread false claims about the voting machines to sell pillows. Lindell says other retailers, including Bed Bath & Beyond and Kohl's, dropped MyPillow's products lightly last year amid the controversy over Lindell's false claims. Oh, my pretty little angel. Let me just give you a snuggle. Snuggle. There you are, big fella. Mike. Oh, Mike. Let me offer you a bit of advice. And I know you're not going to take it. But at this point, considering where we're at, and you're losing your stores. I don't want to see, there's a lot of people that do work for you in Minnesota, and those are good jobs, and I don't want them to go away. If I may make a suggestion, unless you really got the evidence, beg for forgiveness. Beg for forgiveness. I mean it. Beg for forgiveness. Maybe they will go light on you. But maybe at the end of the day, you might still walk away with your company. As the way things are going right now, and by all the signs we see in Mike, it's going to be a rough year for you, man. It's going to be a rough year. I got Devil Radio coming up, Native Roots Radio coming up in the 6. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.